The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
Yesterday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 1,175 points. Today, it's down right now about 10 points. It was the largest single-day point drop on record, but that doesn't really mean anything because... you know, the Dow is at 25,000. The performance came on the heels of the Dow falling 665.75, not 666 on Friday. You can round it up, but that's not the way numbers work. Barely 2 weeks ago, the Dow peaked at 26,616. Then between last Friday and yesterday, it lost over a month of gains. It's the worst 2 days the stock market has seen in almost 2 years. However, the market is still up 26% in the last year. The typical annual growth is about 8. Too much, too fast, perhaps. One director at the brokerage firm said, "This is the first time in a while I'd say it feels like borderline panic-type selling. We haven't seen something like this since the Brexit vote." But a director at a different firm said, "The markets are just taking a bit of a breather, which I'd argue is somewhat healthy." Yes, things like this actually slow down a melt-up. You don't want money just to keep piling in and piling in faster and faster and faster and faster. That's dangerous. So is this a snowball or is this just really nothing? Is it a snowball that's going to lead to an avalanche or a snowball that's going to be made into a snowman? Some bond investors are spooked about there being more inflation on the horizon than they originally forecasted. In its effort to slow down inflation, the Federal Reserve has caused a lot of problems in the past when it becomes overly jumpy and tweaks interest rates too much. Investors got nervous that the Fed might do this and do their usual tinkering and make things worse yesterday. A lot of this over the past couple of days is psychology. The market has gone so high, people are worried that it doesn't make sense for stocks and bonds to stay at the level that they are, so they're tapping the brakes. But what happens if the brakes are out and we're headed downhill? That's possible because the last hour of trading yesterday was a combination of AI and humans. Humans can tap the brakes. Once it breaks barriers, however, and the stock market is controlled by AI, there's nobody stepping in saying, wait, this is panic selling, don't. That's why it dropped, 500 points in just a couple of minutes. The government is also borrowing more money than ever. Retirement funds are in crisis. You couple these conditions with the volatility in Europe and add on the immigration issue over in Europe and here. And the world seems to be on the verge of a massive reset. However, I don't think this is it. Not yet. I believe this is just a correction. But here's the super good news for you. I'm always wrong on timing.
It's Tuesday, February 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Now, I read something really interesting today, the psychology of loss aversion. It explains why so many people, for instance, just a few years ago, you would talk about a stock market like this and we could have a reasonable conversation, except with people on the left, because they would just go haywire and they would say, "That's crazy. That's no, there's nothing to it." We could have a reasonable conversation and say, look, it's you know, just look at what we're spending. We're spending, borrowing $1 trillion in the next 12 months as a country, and we're putting a $1.4 trillion stimulus package together. We're spending money like crazy. That's not good. It's not healthy. Our debt is already at $22 trillion. And yet, our side is suddenly fine with a $1.3 trillion stimulus package.
You keep lowering it. I mean, the quote from the speech was at least $1.5 trillion. And we've heard at least up to $1.7. So that seems to be the general range for the target of this thing. And, you know, look, we've always said as conservatives, we want lower taxes. In conjunction with lower taxes, we want lower spending. And we have to watch that. I mean, you know, look, all the gains that have happened, you know, from the economy are at risk if you start spending money like Democrats. And we all know that. That's something that every conservative knows. You don't spend money like that. You don't spend, I mean, you know, we had an introduction of about $3 trillion of new spending in the great speech from, you know,
the president
the other day. And that's just, you know, one way to go. But combined to what we're talking about with the economy, and you talked about this, if you want to go back and listen to it, it's on the podcast today. But if you listen to the, you know, the breakdown of that, one of the important things is you can't just spend forever. It can really, you know, put at risk the gains in the economy and the positive effects of the tax cuts. We like the tax cuts. The tax cuts are great, and the tax cuts are having positive impact. But what's going to happen to our deficit if we combine the tax cuts with new spending? Because that's what Democrats want to do, is they want to tax and spend, right? They've always said that it's a tax and spend party. They want to get more money from you so they can spend more. And we're the other side. We want to get less money from you, and we want to spend less. We want to shrink government. Well, this combination of getting less money from the people and spending multiple trillions of dollars in extra finances is going to be a major problem.
So here's the real problem. Here's why the Dow went down, and I'm going to touch on this real quickly. I'm going to really lay this out on the chalkboard tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. But let me just quickly do this. Your wages are going up. That's a good thing. You're getting more tax dollars that you are not sending to Washington. That's a good thing. You're going to spend it. That's going to cause inflation. That's not a good thing. The Fed is going to raise interest rates. In some ways, it's a good thing. Economically, that needs to be done. For you, it's not a good thing. For companies, it's not a good thing. That's normal. What's different this time is all of that is happening with a $22 trillion debt and another $1 trillion of raising in the next 2 months. We need to raise. The Federal Reserve or the Treasury needs $1 trillion. That's 84% higher than last year. They need to raise that. Well, if your stocks are volatile and your interest rates are down, you're going to need something to park your money. So people are going to go to the Federal Reserve and they're going to buy Treasury bonds. And they'll buy them, and they'll buy them cheap, and the Treasury will offer high interest rates, and that's where all your money will go. All the investment that could happen is going to the federal government instead of companies. That's the problem. That's the problem. Okay, let me give you the Lawson version. So we used to be able to have these conversations, but there is something that is happening, and we have to recognize it in others and in ourselves, because it's natural and normal. People protect what they have. Psychology has proven a loss aversion ratio of between 1.5 and 2.5, which means you're more likely to act in a way that protects what you currently have rather than rock the boat. So most people are adverse to losing. But it's why people become more conservative, and I don't mean it in the traditional way, conservative in what they do when things are really good, and they're hostile to anything that threatens it.
A conservative, not in a political sense, but like in an investment sense or just a lifestyle sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You anything that, for instance, if you invested in Bitcoin, you don't like anybody talking down Bitcoin. Hey, I got money in Bitcoin. Say nice things about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? You don't spook the markets. Okay. It's why when we were talking about Barack Obama and the economy, why we believed it, because you weren't getting the money. You weren't getting the money. The big corporations and all of the special interest groups, all of the people were getting it. Some people got very, very rich. And those were the people, surprise, surprise, in Washington and New York. Those are the people who got rich. Not you. In Columbus, Ohio, you didn't get rich. They did. And when they controlled the media, they had a real problem. Don't talk it down. Don't say those things. What are you, crazy? You're a revolutionary. You hate government. Right? Remember all of that? We were saying, no, this is just not working. This is not right. Now it's working for you in the middle of the country because you're getting the tax cuts. And so right now it's working for you, but it's not working now for anybody who is in the stock market big time. It's not working for Wall Street. It's not working for the special interest groups in Washington. What did they get out of it? It's working for you. And so now those people are the ones talking it down and saying, wait, I'm not sure. Let's say, hey, this is really bad. Listen, I want you to listen to Donnie Deutsch. Listen to this and tell me if you heard any of us who were part of the Tea Party ever say anything close to this on television.
This is frightening stuff. If you are an American, if you're somebody who's 80 years old and sitting at home and you've watched the greatness of this country, you should be terrified. And if you're a 12-year-old and the future is in front of you, this is terrifying. This is not time to analyze and pundit. People, we need a revolution at this point. And I'm not doing TV here, and I'm not going, crazy Donnie. Well, this is what's going on.
We need a revolution here.
That was crazy.
He called the president a dictator. Now imagine.
I mean, I guess, you know, because I don't remember ever saying we need a revolution right now.
I was one saying we don't want a revolution. Yeah. You never know how revolutions end. You do not want to go to the streets and have a revolution.
I mean, they would point out, you know, Ron Paul's campaign slogan had revolution in it. And you know, obviously the Tea Party is sort of named after
the revolution.
But it was always a legitimate call for it, right?
A revolution at the ballot box. That's what we always talked about.
Yeah.
But that wasn't good enough. Now, why is that? Because it was working for them. It was fine for them. They were getting the things they wanted. And so they were just like, shut up. Don't rock the boat. What are you doing? It was their natural instinct to protect it. Now, the press needs to be aware of that natural instinct and stop it. It is my natural instinct as well to defend people who I don't really necessarily like or I really believe in everything, but they're furthering our goals. It is my natural instinct to do that as well, but that's not my job. It's not my job.
It's everybody's natural instinct,
yes.
Right? You look for ways to defend what you like. It happens on the internet all the time with people's points, right? They don't want to lose the point, so they'd rather sit here and defend a position they know in their heart of hearts is not accurate, is not true, but they just don't want to give up that ground. They don't want to lose.
And they're more willing to accept, for instance, we would be more willing to accept that the country is in financial trouble under Barack Obama, half the country would feel more comfortable saying that than they would with Donald Trump. Even though both of them are dangerous for the country's economy, right now somebody is in their car going, you damn you, Glenn Beck, what are you saying? $1 trillion of borrowing for spending of this year and a $1.5 trillion spending package. I'm being consistent. I was against $787 billion. I thought that was outrageous. This is double that size and an 84% increase on government spending without the stimulus package, an 84% increase on loan guarantees of going out and raising. We have to raise by, I think, March, $1 trillion. That's insanity. That's insanity. And we should all be able to admit that. What we have to admit first is there are things that I don't want to because my natural instinct is things are working. Things are going well for me.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't talk that down. We're not talking things down. You should not feel that way. If you want to talk about things, you're not talking things down. You're talking reality. And when we talk reality, then and only then can we fix those things along the way to make sure that reality doesn't turn into a nightmare, that we turn it back and say, okay, that was our reality that we were facing, but we did the hard things to make sure that we went in another direction. And that's what we're missing right now.
And I think one thing we've seen with the Trump presidency specifically is when he flirts with some of these ideas that don't align with conservatism, and that has happened, when he flirts with those things and his people push back,
He changes.
He sees the light, right? And, you know, that is why I think it's important for people who do. I mean, you know, like, he's not going to listen to Glenn Beck, you know, and he's not going to listen to me. But he will listen to you if you look at you're one of his supporters and you're the people that fought for him in the streets and voted for him. And you say, look, it's legitimate to say, we love these tax cuts. We love a lot of the deregulation stuff he's done.
Love
we
it.
Love, you know, love that he it. Has a guy who, in the it's Supreme great. Court who's done, who sees the country the way the Constitution
is written
and designed. But at the same time, you can't cut taxes and then throw, and that we're just talking about the stimulus here. Let's talk about the Family Leave Act he wants to do. There was multiple spending proposals he's proposed.
And $3 trillion in spending.
About $3 trillion of spending on the high end. It was probably about $2.5 on the low end.
And let's say he only gets a third of that.
Yeah.
That's too much.
We don't need to funnel multiple trillions of dollars from the government, from us to the government, so that they can spend it on God knows what. I mean, it's not a good idea. It wasn't a good idea with Barack Obama. Isn't a good idea with Donald Trump. And maybe if his people say, hey, we love you, but don't do this thing, he'll actually listen.
Yes. And it's important. At some point, the debt is too much. You know, I know we've been saying this since you know, it was at $10 trillion. It's at 22. It will be 23, minimum 23 by the end of this year. That's not good. At some point, it's too much and the camel's back breaks. So where is that? I don't know. We should be going as a group. We should be pushing in the opposite direction.
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. I'm so glad that you are here today. There is clear evidence now that Hillary Clinton colluded with Russia. This is according to Nunez. Can we listen to this audio, please?
Look, I think there's clear evidence of collusion that the Democratic Party and the Hillary Clinton campaign colluded with the Russians. Okay, you don't get to hire lawyers and pretend like that didn't happen.
The very
and then
thing
it goes to what they accuse you of is what they actually were doing.
So this is really this is an interesting new piece of information that there is a second dossier. And this dossier was being compiled by, let me see if I can get all the names here, somebody whose husband was an ambassador, or sorry, brother was an ambassador. What he did is his late sister was married to Strobe Talbot, the chief authority on Russia in Bill Clinton's State Department, and Shearer heard some stuff and got a dossier from Russia, passed it on to the State Department, to Hillary Clinton, who Clinton's people passed it on to the State Department. State Department passed it on to the DOJ. We have all of these connections to the DNC and to Hillary Clinton all passing information for an investigation that they clearly wanted to happen. Yesterday, you had the Oars passing information directly from Fusion GPS right to the DOJ through a back channel live as it was coming in. This is not right.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to play What If. Pat Gray just joining us. I want to play What If for a second. Now, here is the plot line, okay? Listen to the plot line. A possibly corrupted FBI director, biased agents manipulating investigations, partisan moles in the Justice Department, the overall threat of a hostile foreign intelligence service that is feeding things. This would be a good movie, right? But this is what's happening right now. Now, let me play What If. Right now, half the country doesn't see a problem with this. Let me play What If here. Imagine if this was 2007 and everything that I have just described was happening in 2007. And now Barack Obama is in the office and it is found out that the FBI director might have been corrupt. There were biased agents who were doing everything they could to stop him. They were in bed with a foreign government. They were going to a FISA court and not telling them that it was all funded by, you know, by the John McCain campaign. Imagine that. Imagine what would be said about Bush. Imagine what would be said about John McCain. There's not a single liberal on the planet that would be okay with that. None of them. If indeed what they what happened was all of a sudden, you know, there's a photograph with Obama and Louis Farrakhan. We know that exists because it was just released. But the left hid it. The left press hid it. They just released it a couple of weeks ago. And they did it because they knew what would happen. So imagine if that photo would have been leaked, just the photo, leaked by Russia to John McCain, who then had a surrogate go to a newspaper, go to Drudge Report, and publish that. Can you imagine what they would have said? If the Drudge Report, which they did, would have released from a secret dossier that Obama had ties to domestic terrorist Bill Ayers. If there was a coordinated action from the McCain campaign funneling all this information about Bill Ayers and about Jeremiah Wright and all of these things, all of the tapes, all of the pictures, feeding that to the FBI then started to wiretap Obama to find out about all of his connections. And all of this was just dumped out into the press. What do you think, if you were on the left, what do you think you'd be saying right now? And if you'd be saying it then, why aren't you saying it now? Because here's the one thing I learned. If you don't correct the problem, I said to you while I was on Fox, if you're a liberal, I said all the time, you've got to stop this or the next guy is, you think, what do you think the next guy's going to do? If this isn't caught, what do you think happens in the future? This isn't going to be good. We need to stop it. And those of you on the right, we have to stop this. We have to investigate and find out everything that's going on, mainly with Russia and the FBI and the DOJ and the FISA court. We have to know that. If that entangles Donald Trump or entangles Hillary Clinton, the chips fall where they may. But we must do it, because if we don't clean it up, what do you think the next Democrat administration will do? Worse. It has to be fixed. Pat Gray, welcome to the program.
Kind of have to have the mainstream media cooperating with that, though, and they're not going to.
No.
They're just not. They don't care. All they care about is trying to find some link between Trump and Russians. That's the only thing that concerns them.
I can't watch the news anymore.
I know.
I can't watch left news. I can't watch the right news, because they're both telling me bogus stories. They're telling me fantasies, both sides. This isn't about Donald Trump, and it's not about Hillary Clinton. It is about the FBI, DOJ, and Russia, and the FISA court. My gosh, if this is the way the FISA court works, we should all be terrified.
And how about this is the way the FBI works?
Yes.
We should all be terrified.
In a way, that's kind of the nicer explanation here. Like, hey, they weren't just targeting Donald Trump. They're just bad all the time. Yeah. And that's actually in a lot of ways scarier, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because you look at the FISA thing and you know, how they left out this detail and they omitted this, that, you know, they should have put in there. Maybe that's what they're doing all the time, right? Like, I mean, libertarians have been complaining about that forever.
Oh, I think they probably are.
Right. They all get approved. All the FISA applications get approved. Like, it's like 99.7% of them. And the reason is because they'll put anything in there to get it, and they're not really looking at trying to stop them.
It's shocking to me that the libertarian movement is not just growing out of control right now. Shocking to me. They're just somebody in the Libertarian Party just doesn't get it. I don't know what it is, but they don't get it.
And there's no libertarian to really get behind.
No.
Who would lead that
the
charge?
The last time that when they ran, they ran Gary Johnson. Yeah.
Who's not a libertarian.
No.
He's closer to socialism than libertarianism.
He was a big government guy. It didn't make any sense.
Uh-huh.
They're blowing it. That is the answer.
Big
libertarianism
time.
Is the answer. If libertarian means constitutional, if the libertarian mm-hmm. movement is about that Bill of Rights and the Constitution, what are the powers? What are not the powers? Let's just do that. That's the answer. Because we all mm-hmm. agree that one thing we unite on, if you take it out of the old-timey language of the Bill of Rights, all of us agree on that. At least 8 out of the 10, we agree. So how come we can't get along?
The problem is if you need one man, one woman to lead libertarianism, then it's not libertarianism as the solution. It's just a guy who's preaching it. Like, you have people just don't connect with the concepts enough. I mean, you pull these topics, libertarian topics, and they're all very popular individually. It's just, I think when it comes to people, you know, I don't know if it's just if it affects their life, they don't want to do it, or it feels weird. I mean, Libertarian Party certainly doesn't help itself with some of the candidates it runs, because, you know, they can be a tad quirky at times.
You know, I'll take the quirky ones as long as they're actually libertarians.
Yeah. Gary Johnson had nothing to do.
He had nothing to
do with the Libertarian Party.
No.
At least
not
Ron Paul had something to do with libertarians.
Right. And he ran as a Republican.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the issue. I mean, but it's part of it. I think part of it is, I mean, look at, you know, we heard of this all the time during the election, which was, you know, it's a binary choice. I think that's how 99% of people look at it. It's, you have choice A and choice B, pick the best. And
So choice A is Republican or Democrat. What's choice B?
Right.
Is that really what it is? Yeah. It's what it is. I mean, come on. We're borrowing $1 trillion. We have a $1.5 trillion suggested stimulus package. A Republican president said we'll do $3 trillion in spending in his State of the Union address while we cut taxes. What the hell? I don't need a Democrat.
Well, I mean,
I got that party.
You get the cut taxes, I guess, right? I mean, there's certainly advantages, and there's been some good policy developments that we've talked about at length. But, you know, it's for another movement to actually develop, you'd have to have people connecting with the fundamental principles. And I don't think that's what they do. I think at this point, it's like, you know, it was Eagles versus Patriots. I didn't care how I don't care if they ran it or they threw it. I didn't care if they won it with a defensive struggle or a shootout. I just wanted them to win.
Yeah.
And a shootout?
Yes, and it's a sports term.
Oh, it's a sports term. I was saying, well, it's the Eagles. I thought maybe there was a chance.
Well, you know, knowing Philly, occasionally things are shot at people.
Yes,
okay?
It's not the players. It's all of the fans in the stands that are shooting the other
players.
Don't
demean our culture.
All right. Oh, sorry.
And it's fine in sports to do it that way.
Yeah.
To have your favorite team and come what may, no matter what, you root for them.
Because you don't want to be a fair weather fan. You're a fan for other reasons, not because they're winning. You're a fan because they mean something to you.
But politics and just rooting for the Republicans is lunacy, because they don't stand for anything anymore. Just like the Democrats, how many Democrats understand that the Democrat Party is closer to the Communist Party than the principles of JFK?
Yeah.
Are there any Democrats who understand that? Not really. They just continue to vote for their team.
How many Democrats understand that the Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid of the 1990s were far to the right of the Republicans on immigration today?
Oh, my.
More conservative than almost every Republican today.
We just played a montage
like Chuck Schumer
last week of Democrats talking about immigration in the early 2000s and the mid-90s. And it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
How have you?
You don't have it. You don't even have it, except for like Ted Cruz. You don't have anybody who's like that strong.
You got nobody.
Immigration now.
No.
Listen to the Harry Reid, you know, mid 1990s clips where he sounds like Ron Paul to audit the Fed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every year he introduced a bill.
Every year. The same people with completely different views.
Happened?
How all of a sudden the Democrats are to tell us they're tough on Russia?
Yeah.
Is that the world we live in? That the Democrats are tough
Russia? May I say, I found out from my children on Sunday, the world we live in is the world where Justin Timberlake is the king of pop.
Now, see?
That is the world we live
You've
in.
You've been That's avoiding that huge topic, because yesterday you greatly misled me by telling me that Justin Timberlake's the king of pop.
Please tell me he's not.
He's not.
Oh, thank goodness.
He's not the king of pop.
My kids, we sat there, and I'm like, Justin, I can't believe Justin Timberlake? And they're like, Dad, he's our generation's king of pop. And I'm like, he is not. Yes, he is.
I mean, he's had a heck of a run.
Yeah, he's
no,
good.
They said that they actually labeled him the king of pop.
The king of pop.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying that like...
He's the
that
Michael,
he's got
Jackson.
Michael Jackson's
yeah,
label
he's,
now.
Yeah, that's he got Michael Jackson's label.
Do you believe
label.
That?
I wouldn't believe. I mean,
right?
He's,
I mean, that's
he's
too
certainly
far.
An A-lister.
Yes.
Right? For sure.
He's a big star.
Yes.
But there's apparently bigger. The BBC judged who is the king or queen of pop by streams, combination of all YouTube and Spotify plays, followers, they combined Twitter and Instagram and all that, Facebook, weeks spent at number one, album sales globally, and personal fortune. Those are all pretty good
criteria
to judge.
Queen of pop would be Beyonce.
Tay-Tay.
Well, at number 10, they kind of jammed them all in together.
Okay, all right, okay.
So this is sort of gender neutral.
Okay, good, thank goodness.
At number 10.
Number 10.
See, Ed Sheeran didn't even make the list. Neither did Lady Gaga or Kanye. So at number 10, Justin Timberlake.
Okay. It's
still top 10.
He's still top 10. Mm-hmm. At number 9, Drake.
Wow.
It shows you how bad today's music is. Drake? What? We had Elton John and Billy Joel and Michael Jackson. Drake? You're going to throw Drake at me?
Every time I hear
that is a kind of a duck, isn't it?
I was going to go cake. I was going to go cake. Isn't it Drake's Cakes? Isn't that like a hostess-like product?
I'm staying quiet because I don't know Drake at all.
At number 8.
I believe the Canadian rapper.
Canadian rapper? Canadian, okay. Yeah.
Which is obviously the source of all rap.
At number 8, and I like this guy, but I don't know how long he's been big or if he really qualifies, but he's number 8 on the list, Bruno Mars.
Yeah,
oh, he's good.
Right, yeah.
He's good.
He's good.
He's done a Super Bowl halftime, so he must
I wouldn't have considered him the king of pop either,
no,
but he's really good.
Adele is number 6.
I would put in Adele.
But again, like, you really like her, right?
Yeah. And I would put her in the close of that category of queen of pop.
Many of these artists have had a 3 to 5 year period of being arguably the king of pop, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, the part of the Michael Jackson thing was it was a long lasting.
It was king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley. When he died in 1979 on a career that started in the 50s, radio shut off. Do you remember that? I mean, it was a huge 3-day deal. That's a king of rock and roll. A king of pop is Michael Jackson, who started when he was 8 and was making number one records until the day he died. That's a king of pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So far, no name, especially Drake, is not in that.
But Drake is huge. I know this is not his target demo.
A king of pop has to have generational spread.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Eminem's at number 6, which blows me away, too.
Yeah, he's been around a long time.
He's weathered a long time. He's supposed to be
pop.
It's not even a pop artist, I don't think.
At number 4, tied for number 4, Beyonce and Katy Perry.
Okay. I mean, again,
they're
like,
both pretty big.
Okay, so
right?
then it's got to be. The other one I was thinking of is the country singer that said, you know, in front of Elton John, I have this theory that love songs are really just poems set to music. Who was it that said that?
I don't know who it was, it was at the
100 most influential people. She was performing. Elton John was in the front row. I was sitting right behind. It's 100. It's an audience of 100 and their guests. Okay, 100 most influential. Right. Bill Clinton was there,
wow.
And she gets up, she performs, and she. Elton John. I think Elton John wanted to kill himself. No crap, really.
Third, Taylor Swift.
That's her. That was my guess.
That's her.
Taylor Swift.
That's what I said. Tay Tay.
I don't know how Rihanna goes ahead of Taylor Swift.
Lots of big songs.
And at number one, the king of pop, according to the BBC, Justin Bieber. That's actually worse, isn't it?
I felt better.
I know. I felt better about yesterday.
You took the Justin and you doubled down.
Oh my gosh. All right. Thank you.
Pat Gray Unleashed is on the Blaze Radio and TV Network coming up. I'm going to be appearing here talking a little more detail on my Super Bowl trip on the program today. So please listen.
Buying and selling a home is the most important thing you'll ever do, at least financially. It's one of those things that can really wreck your financial future or change it for the better. It's important to do your research to make sure you have a real estate agent that knows what the heck they're talking about. I don't know, that knows the details, that knows what they're doing, but also cares about how you're treated in this transaction. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is basically a website with a giant list of these people. There's about 1,200 agents all across America. And this is a company that Glenn started where he decided, you know what, we've had problems with real estate agents. What if we look and try to screen these people and talk to them and find out who shares our values? And then we can kind of share them with the American people. And if they share the values that we do, you can get an agent that really understands this process and does a great job for you. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. If you're buying or selling a home, go there. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
Well, Stu has been in the studio, at which we keep at 65 degrees, and I believe he has finally warmed up from his Super Bowl trip.
Yes. Man, people in Minnesota, I have a lot of respect for you. That is hard. Just going outside for 10 seconds.
You know, you don't have to do
that. Frozen to the core.
Yeah, I don't know how people live there.
It's amazing. Yeah. You got to be a different breed.
God bless you. God bless you. Welcome back, Stu. Congratulations, Eagles.
Yes.
See you tonight at 5. Don't miss it. The economy and what's coming next. Tonight at 5, only on theblaze.com/TV.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.